Hulu's new series, The Great, bills itself as an occasionally true story. And it's a big story, a sweeping epic about Russia in the 1700s, full of palace intrigue, sex, and violence, and the rise of Catherine the Great. Elle Fanning plays Catherine, and Nicholas Hoult also stars as the sociopathic emperor, Peter.
The show shares a lot of thematic DNA with the 2018 film The Favorite. It was created by one of that film's screenwriters, Tony McNamara. And it's more than willing to scramble history in the service of a good story. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we're talking about the new Hulu series, The Great, on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. So don't go away.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Pretty Litter. Cats are notorious for hiding their illness. It's hard to tell if they're sick, but with Pretty Litter, you can keep tabs on your cat's health. Pretty Litter is kitty litter 2.0. It changes colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. Pretty Litter is made of super light crystals and naturally occurring minerals that are safe for your cat. Switch to Pretty Litter today by visiting prettylitter.com and use promo code HAPPYHOUR for 20% off your first order.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Also joining us from her home studio in Boston is Margaret H. Willison, who is one half of Two Bossy Dames and one third of the Appointment Television podcast. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, guys. Home studio is a very fancy way to describe the mic I have anchored to my work desk, but I love it.
I've been telling my friends I built a home studio, which consists of putting a microphone in a closet. All right. Now, before we begin, I do want to give a quick synopsis of The Great. The show is based very loosely on the story of the young woman who would rise to become Catherine the Great in 1760s Russia. In a nutshell, The Great has Catherine marrying the loutish Emperor Peter, only to become disenchanted and to set about staging a coup. We meet Peter's court. We encounter various figures who are grappling for power as their status kind of rises and falls. And we witness countless acts of sex, betrayal, and sometimes grisly violence. Now, Glenn, you are a huge fan of the movie The Favorite, which is why I'm going to start with you. What did you think of The Great?
I mean, you know, short answer, huzzah. Long answer, what are you kidding me? This was made of me, for me, by me. I mean, this is The Favorite, but Russian. This is The Favoritishka, and I am all for it. I like how the acting, the dialogue is slightly heightened in that way we signify period drama. This is serious period drama, but it's not so heightened that when we drop down into more, shall we say, earthier idioms, it doesn't break the spell. It feels like it's fluid. Now, of course, Nicholas Hoult's Peter, who is a sociopath, he is always in the earthier idiom, and I couldn't really pull any of his dialogue for the radio review that I did because it would be one long bleep. What I like about that character is he's not an idiot. He's just the kind of coarse narcissist that a life of such obscene wealth you might imagine nurturing. Yet even he is intermittently sympathetic. And that's what I really like about the show. I mean, Elle Fanning's Catherine is allowed to be something more than the vessel for the audience's sympathy, right? Because all these characters start out in the pilot as broad types, but as the episodes go on, they're allowed to shade in more emotional color. She starts out a naive romantic. She's utterly convinced of her own, you know, charm, wit, and intelligence. And what I like about that is that when the scales fall from her eyes, she doesn't drop that. She still retains that kind of smugness, but she just learns to channel it better. I think the show is really smart about privilege, too. I mean, she has got all these lofty notions of equality and reform. This is what Fanning does. And she hasn't done a lot of comedy before, but she's great at this because she's showing us that she is about doing good, but she's also about wanting to be seen doing that good. Right. I just really dug it.
Nice. How about you, Margaret?
I am really, really enjoying it as well. In addition to reminding me of The Favorite, obviously, it makes me think a lot of Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette. Mm-hmm. What I like about both projects, and what I particularly like about this, is a lot of historical fiction tends to create characters who are modern in all things except for their surroundings, right? So they just step in and they make it seem like if you step back in time, you would have perfect enlightenment and you would know all the right things to do. And that was all that was holding anyone back from having progress then. What's great about this is that it shows how complicated agency actually would have been for a woman or a servant in Russia. It takes a more complex view of historical interactions and does a better job of dramatizing the sort of half measures one has to engage in to actually create the progress that we vaunt Catherine the Great for creating, our enlightened despot, Catherine the Great. That's all I know as far as history of her goes, BT Dubs. I know she was one of the enlightened despots. But otherwise, you know, I'm really a blank page upon which this show can write. And I love what it's doing.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a two-screen experience, right? If you watch this while you have Britannica.com open, like any serious student of Russian history, it's going to break your brain. It's going to give you an aneurysm.
Yeah, I mean, they're not messing around with that an occasionally true story. I mean, we could spend an entire episode talking about differences between the depictions in this show and what actually happened in 1760s Russia, which is kind of Tony McNamara's thing, right? I mean, The Favorite is doing a lot of the same things. For me, for this show, I think overall I enjoyed it. I think Al Fanning is really terrific creating this multi-dimensional character. I think Nicholas Holt is walking much more of a tightrope than you might outwardly think from how broad that character is. I think his ability to balance sociopathy and goofiness is a really, really hard thing to pull off. And I think that's a tremendous comedic performance. The show overall for me, I was a little bit frustrated. It's shoehorning in a lot of radical shifts in tone. There are big laughs, there's high drama, there's poofy dresses and leather pants, and war and disease and bursts of really gruesome violence, lots of different flavors of sex. There's so much rutting in this show. It's fitting. It's fitting a lot in. And for me, and some of this is, you know, kind of your mileage may vary, I found some of the bursts of really grisly violence kind of off-putting in this show. There are a few too many kind of throat slashings. Really late in this series, there's a whole business about torture that took me out of the show, and I found it a little bit less satisfying as it went along. It flies a little bit off the rails, like right near the end, in ways that left me with a little bit of a bad taste. But at the same time, there are so many high quality ingredients being stirred around at all times, including, among other things, a very low key diversity in the casting that I found really appealing. The willingness to play with history also means a willingness to right some wrongs in just the way stories get told. And I did really appreciate that about this show.
Yeah.
Well, and it's also important to note, it's not necessarily ahistorical to have people of color in those spaces.
Right.
It's not how we commonly understand it, but our understanding of race and the understanding of race that was popular at the time are very different. And I do sort of like the just low-key, unshowy, diverse casting.
Right.
I think that it is both progressive and historically appropriate.
Right. And you talked about the plot, Stephen. I mean, what we have here is a ceaseless narrative churn as Catherine's status rises and falls, as plots against Peter come together and come apart over and over again. Why that might be standing out, at least to me, is because this show, as we mentioned, shares so much creative DNA with The Favorite. And what's missing, of course, is Yorgos Lanthimos. Now, it's not fair to compare them, but it's also inevitable to compare them because you've got the same writer, you've got the same actor in Nicholas Holt, you've got the same production design, you've got the same subject, royals are jerks, you've got the same tone. If you walked out of The Favorite like me and you turned to your smarter friend and said, so what were the rabbits about? And what's with all the fisheye lenses? If you came away from The Favorite just like that, then this is right up your street. But I think if you came from The Favorite and you were about the lanthimosity of it, the style, the vision, the darkly surreal tone, I think you might find this to be a little watered down. When I went back to pull some clips for the show, for the radio review again, because I wanted to highlight the dialogue, which I remembered as being, you know, sizzling and snappy, it was tough to find because so many of the scenes that I really loved between Catherine and her servant, Mariel, played by the amazing Phoebe Fox.
Yeah. She's so good.
So much of their scenes together are reaction shots, Mariel just reacting silently, which are hilarious, but it's not there in the dialogue. So this show is very layered to me, and there's a lot to enjoy.
Yeah, I think you have a tremendous supporting cast doing a lot of work on this show. And I think one feeling I kind of had binging the entire kind of 10 hours of this show is I don't know that this is a show you necessarily want to try to consume all at once. It is being released all at once as a 10-episode block on Hulu. But I think allowing this story to breathe a little bit more instead of kind of rushing through it the way I did would probably provide a little bit of a different effect. This show, for me, I started to feel its length when I binged it.
Sure. It's like, do you want to have all the heads of the Swedish dead on your dining table at once? You know, or do you want to take them in slowly walking down a hallway one at a time? You know, what's going to be your better experience of decapitated Swedes? You know,
it's true. Now, this is based on a play that Tony McNamara wrote in 2008. And in that play, it covers the entire life of Catherine the Great up to the event that ends this particular 10-episode block. And then they brought in another actress, an older actress, to portray Catherine for the rest of her life. And if this gets the second season, I truly hope it deserves, I don't want to get rid of Fanning yet. I hope she hangs on because she is just, I shouldn't be surprised, but I had never seen her play kind of self-satisfied in a comic kind of way. The show is arch, but it never spills over into campiness. And the production design is just as great as it needs to be. It looks fantastic, but we only see the same five rooms over and over again. So they're great rooms, but there's just a few of them.
Yeah, I do think this show is beautifully shot. You're not quite getting the kind of gleaming artiness that Yorgos Lanthimos put into The Favorite, but there are several shots where you kind of want to pause the show and just like, oh, look at how beautifully composed that is. There are some very, very lovely shots in this, and I don't want to diminish the look of this show because it doesn't always compare favorably to The Favorite, which is this gorgeous, heavily decorated, Oscar-nominated movie.
They're sort of doing slightly different things. I mean, I feel like The Great is operating in more of a heightened traditional costume drama space, and The Favorite just had a really distinct stylistic crispness that this does not quite match, but I don't think that it's trying to, and I do think that there is some value in the expanded emotional and color palette that it has access to because it's not hewing as closely to that Yorgos vision.
And The Favorite really stuck to inside the palace, and the class dichotomy you got was kind of hovering at the edges. Here, that's the subject. It is much more willing to engage on class and on the way that privilege curdles the soul, I think, than The Favorite did.
Yeah, and I think this show is definitely leaning into some of its contemporary echoes. There's a plot line that's really touching on like anti-vaxxers.
Yeah.
There's a line kind of early that sounds almost like somebody's about to say make Russia great again. There are definitely these little glimmers of contemporary issues echoing in ways that I think The Favorite did a little bit less.
Yeah. And also, you expect a few kind of anachronistic groaners. So when, for example, we see the Chernobyl girls choir and somebody says they're glowing, you're like, okay, you get only one of those episode, just one.
You get one of those.
Penalty 5 yards.
Wow, Glenn, that was an accurate sports metaphor. I'm very impressed.
I got layers.
Yeah, you're growing so much in quarantine, Glenn. Not just your biceps.
Well, we want to know what you think about The Great. Find us on Facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Before we go, we wanted to let a few of our fourth chairs share what is making them happy this week. Take it away, Aisha Rasko.
Hi, this is Aisha Rasko, White House reporter for NPR. What's making me happy this week is questioning the nature of my existence, or something like that. But for some reason, even at this moment, it kind of makes me a little bit comforted to kind of like question what's going on. There's a show on called Devs. It's on Hulu, the first season. And I just found it really interesting. It's about this big tech company, kind of like a Google, kind of like a Facebook. And there's a mystery about what's really happening at this company. And so I really liked it. It reminded me of this other show that I really like, Westworld, which is on HBO. Both of these shows raise questions about choice and who's in control and why do we make the decisions that we make as human beings. And so I just really like those kind of big open-ended questions. And so I really recommend them and both shows, Devs and Westworld, and they're making me happy this week.
Greetings, PCHH Nation. Chris Klemek here. It's been an incredibly unfunny few months, but comedy remains an essential service, so I want to tell you about something that's been making me happy. It is a new comedy album called Why You Should Be Happy by Jeff Zimmerman. You might have heard Jeff's work on This American Life or the Moth podcast. I'd put him in the category of comics like Gary Gulman or Patton Oswalt, where he was already a funny, thoughtful guy who has done his best work after suffering an immensely painful personal tragedy and working his way through that grief and mining it for jokes. I need to disclose to you that Jeff and I do know each other. We were co-stars in a 1986 revival of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown that received glowing reviews, but nevertheless closed after only three performances. I think they needed the cafeteria for something else. But still, the die was cast for Jeff to become a successful performer and for me to wear the same shirt every day for the rest of my life, maybe. Anyway, the title of the album is Why You Should Be Happy. It is by Jeff Zimmerman, like when you turn your stove onto simmer. You can find it on all of the digital retailers where you buy music or audio. If you need a laugh, maybe it'll help. I hope it will. I hope you're staying safe. I miss you all.
Once again, Aisha Rasko recommends Devs on FX on Hulu and Westworld on HBO. And Chris Klimek recommends Jeff Zimmerman's comedy album, Why You Should Be Happy. And that brings us to the end of our show. Thanks to you both for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. And we will see you all back here on Friday when we will be looking at some of the great movies we've missed in the past year.
On Bullseye this week, Tina Fey. On creating Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, 30 Rock, and being the best at everything.
There was a window of time when we would just go to awards things and pick up our prizes and party with the people from Mad Men.
That's this week on Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.